newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on the news media issues of the week, sometimes even some insight into what you might have seen or read or heard. I'm Rex Smith, editor at large of the Times Union, stumbling over my title these days, with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. How are you, Alan?
I'm good, but I was thinking about the way you stumbled. You said editor in large. I just wondered whether, because you're home, and so many of us are home, we are eating too much. One of the major diversions is heading towards the refrigerator.
It is. It's a great way to avoid work or do anything else. Just go to the refrigerator. So with the enlarging Alan Chartok, we have Barbara Lombardo, a longtime editor of the Saratogian, executive editor of the Troy Record, and now teaching at UAlbany. Barbara, how are you?
Hanging in there.
You're not going to talk about enlarging. Don't rise to that bait.
Right. I'm not going to rise to that bait. I might rise to go to the refrigerator, though.
But even when you look in the refrigerator, there's, you know, seldom anything you want to eat. It's just a matter of looking in the refrigerator.
I see. Well, you can tell us your sad stories anytime, Alan. And Judy Patrick, Vice President of the New York Press Association, for many years editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. Judy, you up and around?
I am, and I'm hanging in there.
Well, this is good. You know, I think we're all learning a lot of perseverance skills and perhaps even learning new ways to even digest the news that we'll talk about a little bit here. Hey, Alan, did you know that the President of the United States envies you?
Did he say something?
He didn't say, my dear friend Alan, but it is true, apparently, according to the New York Times reporting, that President Trump wanted to have a radio show. He wanted to be on the radio every day. Isn't that cool?
Yes, and the reason he didn't do it, he said, was that he didn't want to get in Rush Limbaugh's way.
He wanted to have an open line for people to call and engage one-on-one. He was going to have a daily White House talk radio show. And then almost as suddenly, apparently, as he proposed it, he backed off because he says, he doesn't want to compete with Rush. And as we know, Rush Limbaugh is perhaps the most powerful voice, notwithstanding, you know, the power of Sean Hannity and the other Fox News personalities. It seems as though Rush Limbaugh is still the media player with the most impact on the Trump White House, right?
I would think so. And to me, it would seem that Fox group, the people who watch Fox and who are that constant 30-40% of the American people, he's the hero.
Yeah.
You know, doing a radio program, I think, is harder than it sounds, correct, Alan? I mean, I'm not even sure Trump would translate well on radio. He's interesting to watch, but I'm not sure he'd be that interesting to listen to for 2 hours.
He is not interesting to watch. He is disheartening and horrifying to watch. And I don't think there'd be a shortage of people that would tune in to a radio show for a chance to talk to him or hear from him just riffing off the cuff crazily. So I don't think ratings would be the issue. And he has, you know, usurped television so that he can have his briefings. He doesn't have to worry about a two-hour radio show. He can have a two-hour campaign rally on TV. I certainly changed my mind about having that on television from start
to finish.
So
talk about that, Barbara. You mentioned that before we went on the air, and I was saying this last week, too, that this notion that the networks ought to carry the president's live briefings. You're thinking differently about that now?
Oh, yeah. At the time, I think I was on with Judy also, who had maybe a wiser outlook of this back then, but that I thought that the media, mainstream media, had one responsibility to let the public know what the president is saying and when he is saying it, and that if we chose not to run it, I'm still thinking of we as being part of the mainstream media, if we chose not to air it live, then mainstream media is leaving itself open to criticism that they are, I know the technical word isn't censoring, but they're preventing the public from hearing what the president has to say, and just by the virtue of the weight of the authority of the president saying it, that we'd have to be careful not to appear that we were censoring the president. But now, mm-hmm. I mean, he's just gone off the rails. I don't know why I expected anything different. I feel foolish. He's not providing a brief, cogent update and then turning it over to the scientists. It's turned into a rally. It's no longer something that we should be turning into state TV. But didn't he talk about having a TV station if he didn't win the election
yes.
back in 4 years ago? Not only a radio station, but that he wanted a TV station.
Yeah. Let me tell you guys an interesting story. When Mario Cuomo, which I probably shouldn't tell for a change, but when Mario Cuomo was done being governor, a radio network, perhaps you remember which one it was, Rex, offered him a lot of money to be the answer to Limbaugh. And he went
right.
on, and it didn't work. It did not work. It was on commercial radio.
No. But he wasn't yep. inciting to riot.
No,
so,
I get it.
He wasn't inciting to riot.
He was a normal person.
I remember saying at the time, Alan, that I thought that he needed to have, frankly, you there with him. I mean, you had this history of going on the air with Mario Cuomo, and it was an entertaining as well as informative show. And honestly, I think he would have been better if he had had a co-host, if he had had you sitting there next to him. By himself, there was nobody to stop him from going on at length, and nobody to sort of be a buffer. And so it just
and also a foil when you're interviewing. It helps to have somebody to go back and forth
yeah.
with.
Well,
let me
just finish the story. Here's what happened. Rex is right. It didn't work. People would call him up, and he'd say, I built more prisons than anybody governor in history. When they'd say, you're nothing, you're contemptible, you're this, you're pro-prisoner. And he would yell at them. He would just yell at them. It didn't last. It didn't last at all. Because
He didn't have the demeanor for that, apparently.
So
can you imagine, at Trump, there is no way that Trump could handle 2 hours a day on radio once the weather is better, and they would cut into his golf game.
Even with screening, they would obviously have to have screeners. So, but let me just finish. So maybe I was listening to Rex, or maybe my own inner voice. I went to him and I said, Governor, he was down about this whole thing. And I went to him and I said, Governor, why don't we continue the Capital Connection, which is what it was called at the time. We'll call it Me and Mario. And it went on, I don't even know how many more years, but it was a lot of years. And it worked. It worked for the public radio audience, which is very different, I suspect, from the regular AM radio audience.
May I ask a legal question of our WAMC, Rex and Judy might know the answer to this. Is there anything that could allow the president of the United States to usurp the airwaves in any way, shape, or form on a regular basis? Or
I don't think we know the answer to that. I mean, the president is asserting authority that no president previously has. And who's to say that he couldn't? I think the short answer is no, the government can't take the media in the presence of the First Amendment. But this president has gone beyond anything we expected in a number of ways and says he has entire authority. He says nobody can disagree with the president. He has declared himself to be basically in charge. So I don't know. He may well try to do something like that.
Well, let me put it this way. He can do it. I have no doubt that he can do it. As you know, there are norms, and he has blown over every norm that we have, which is that it's a bad idea, that you don't do it, that that's not the appropriate place for a president to be. But, you know, Franklin Roosevelt went on the air. Other people went on the air. I have no doubt that if he wanted to do it, he would do it. His problem would be people would call up and say, I want to talk to my president. I love him so much. And they put him on and say, USOB. You know, in other words, they would just take advantage of that. And there would be an awful lot of people who would do it, in my opinion. So it would be a very dangerous place for him to go.
To the point about these briefings, however, the fact is we have seen these briefings, especially in recent days, being clearly propaganda opportunities, which is why some of the cable stations, CNN and MSNBC, have cut away from the briefings, especially on the day that the president started to use a propaganda video that had been actually created by Sean Hannity's producers, picked up by the White House, used by the president in supposedly his COVID-19 briefing. And no wonder the networks cut away from it. But of course, his chorus of applause came from Laura Ingraham and Fox, saying it was, oh, what a great briefing, a tour de force. the media have no obligation to cover a president's propaganda. And that's really what a lot of this has become, right?
Well, the problem with that, Rex, is that the minute we say that that's propaganda, somebody's going to point a finger at us and they're going to say, there you go again. You know, you're censoring the president of the United States. You don't get to say what's propaganda and what's not. Now, in the case of this public radio station, we're recording this today, we did limit his time on the air, to great applause, I may add. But we put him on our HD2 channel. And anybody who wants to go there and watch him or listen to him, in our case, can do it. And they're doing it.
Good.
They get to decide what's news and what's not news. And a lot of what is happening at these daily news briefings is not news. There's no news there. There's no news value. You don't walk away knowing anything more than when you started. My question has always been, what can the White House press corps do differently to kind of get better answers out of him? Are they doing enough? Are they standing up enough, or are they just succumbing to the situation?
Well, they are standing
very hard, because the reporters who stand up to him, then he belittles the way he goes after Yamiche Alcindor of the NewsHour, who was formerly a New York Times reporter. But you do have to call him. I think they need to say, but Mr. President, this isn't true. You know, he flatly lied when he asserted at a briefing that mainstream news organizations didn't take the coronavirus seriously early on. It's just not true. The virus was prominently featured on front pages of major newspapers early in January during the impeachment trial. And CNN covered it extensively in January and February. So when the president says major news organizations didn't take it seriously, that's not true. And reporters at the White House need to call that out.
Peter Baker had tweeted that showed two tweets, one from Trump on February 28th. And the quote was, the press is in hysteria mode over coronavirus. And then the Trump video on April 13th says the media minimized the risk from the start. And you're right, Judy, it's difficult to get him to answer these questions.
Well, let me stand up for some of the people in the press corps. I've been watching these assiduously, and I got to tell you, they try. They really try. Some of them are very, very strong and very good, and he won't let them answer. Come on, we all know that. So for us to sit here and to sort of pontificate that they have to do better is not easy. You try it, and I got to tell you, most of you, you have done that. You have tried in cases like that. Of course, jousting with Mario Cuomo at a press conference was very different than jousting with this menace.
I agree with you. I think some of them are doing a great job. There was the CNN reporter, Caitlin Collins, who, when he said the president of the United States, the authority is total, she said, that is not true. Who told you that? He turned to somebody else. He said, enough, and went to the next questioner.
Yeah, enough. Yeah.
What I would like to see, though, is more support among the press corps. If he blows off one question from a reporter, have the next reporter follow up on the first reporter's question, show some solidarity among the group that if he's not answering the question, why don't you guys just one after another ask him the question until he really answers it?
I totally agree, Judy, that they have to keep asking the same question. The only thing that I would take issue with in your statement is that until he answers it, he will never answer it. He'll shut them all off. But that's one way of serving the public. If there's a question that needs to be answered, that should make news itself if they're all asking the same question or a follow-up to the unanswered question.
Again,
don't expect to actually get an answer.
Again, easy enough for you to say, but there's another way to look at this. According to him, and I don't know how much of this was a lie, he said there were 350 reporters, but because of the separation of the seats, we could only let a few in this time. Who do you folks think decides who the few are? He does, and they do, his people do. And when you sort of see the press and portray them as you are, as sort of a unified body who should all be watching out for each other, and they're not. The Fox guys are in there. They let some phony Maloney's in there. Come on, that's what this is all about. Did I cut somebody off? Somebody wanted to say something?
No, but I thought the Correspondents Association decides who gets in.
They do, but the White House overrules that in some cases and has let in people who are not certified by the White House Correspondents Association in recent weeks, and that's quite controversial. You know, you talk about Fox News. This is a very interesting development. Fox News has suddenly reported, supposedly exclusively, that sources believe, you know, sources, that nebulous term, that the coronavirus outbreak originated in the Wuhan lab as part of China's efforts to compete with the U.S. So Fox does this story, which nobody else picks up, cites multiple sources. And the problem is, when I see this story, I personally disbelieve it because the source is Fox News. And because they're just saying multiple sources, legitimate news organizations do their best to more clearly characterize who that source is instead of just saying sources. That could be anybody in your backyard. And B, we know that the intelligence community has been, let's say, affected by the president installing as its leader, the director of national intelligence now, is this highly partisan ambassador to Germany, Rick Grenell. And so we have reason to believe that even if these are intelligence sources, they may well be biased sources. So I think it's very hard for Americans to figure out what's real and what's not, because here we are. This is a big story out of a major news organization, Fox News, and I simply disbelieve it because of the source. Right? What do we do about that?
Well, you know, the New York Times, of course, always says, according to sources.
But the New York Times has a track record of accurate reporting.
And they try to characterize the sources not as just the sources, multiple sources. They try to tell us as much as they can.
Yeah, I know what they say. A person, a high-level person in the da-ba-ba department who spoke on condition of anonymity.
Yeah.
But, you know, we still don't know who that is. Yeah. We're willing to extend a level of trust to the New York Times that, through experience, we know not to extend to Fox News.
No, but the 30% doesn't know that. The 30 or 40%, they think the same thing you think. When you think that they're phony and that they're making this stuff up, the 30 or 40% believes the president of the United States, who tells them that the press corps is out to get him and that they're phonies. Come on.
This story hasn't totally been ignored by the mainstream media. David Ignatius at the Washington Post wrote a column on April 2nd that talked about it's not the idea that there's an evil lab that created this virus. The idea is that this lab had lack security standards and may have accidentally unleashed it on the world. And I think the Washington Post has another story 2 days ago that talked about there are diplomatic cables back and forth where there were U.S. scientists that went there that had real concerns about, you know, the security at this lab. So it's not like it's a totally out there story, but the fact that I think the mainstream media has steered away from it, has allowed the right-wing media to stir up fears that perhaps this was an evil lab endeavor. I think that's what a lot of regular Americans think, and I think we do need to take a closer look at it and vet it.
Yes, and what happens is that the president now acts as they've set him up to be able to spread rumor, to spread a possibility, and twist it however he wishes to twist it, because now he can say, oh, this has been a published story, people are looking at it, and that's his specialty, right, to say, somebody told me, people are saying, I don't know who, but people are saying, and it's terrible.
It fits into the Trump political narrative of trying to blame all of this on China and on the World Health Organization to deflect his own blame. And he is starting an advertising campaign to claim that Joe Biden is weak on China. He's going to have ads in the swing states that are referring to Joe Biden as Beijing Biden and saying that he's soft on China, and see, this is now China's fault. So you just run into problems every time you turn around. And you're right, there is serious question about it. That is, some scientists are taking a look at it, but there's no proof that the novel coronavirus was even studied in Wuhan, nor that it leaked. There's no evidence of an escape from the lab that scientists have said. I'm sorry, I'm just quoting the latest reporting from, as you said, the Washington Post, which I tend to trust more than Fox News.
But in the Fox story, it says Trump's own handling of the crisis has come into focus on January 24th. I'm reading off of their story. On January 24th, for example, Trump tweeted in praise of China's transparency on coronavirus. And there's some other references in that story where, to their credit, they're not absolutely saying it, but saying we need to look at this closely. It could be a problem.
By the way, to listeners, if you have thoughts about this, media@wamc.org is how you can send us your thoughts. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith with Alan Sharchuk, Barbara Lombardo, and Judy Patrick, and we are glad to have you with us here for this weekly look at media issues. You know, just to take a bit of a step away from this topic, a bit of a bad story about Bloomberg News, which has gotten a bit of a black eye for a number of reasons, but I remember this several years ago, 6 years back it was, Bloomberg News killed an investigation into the wealth of some of the top members of the Communist Party in China. And now NPR is reporting, this comes from NPR's David Folkenflik, that Bloomberg News was afraid the Chinese government would retaliate, and so they tried to get the wife of one of the reporters to sign a non-disclosure agreement so that she couldn't talk about it. And one of the reporters in the story ended up getting fired. He's now an investigative reporter for, I think, the New York Times. Yeah. You know, I tell you that the more you read about this, and you remember back during the presidential primary when Mike Bloomberg was running, Bloomberg took a step away and said, well, we can't do investigative reporting on Mike Bloomberg. It does really give Bloomberg News a black eye, right?
I'm just grateful he's not going to be president.
Well, no, it certainly does. And I think that Bloomberg's defense, and I think it was a defense, if I remember the NPR story correctly, was that we have to do business over there. Hey, sorry, that's not the way it works.
Yeah.
Right. It is an important reminder that the owners of media outlets, they have an amazing amount of control of what stories get told and what stories, in a case like this, don't get told.
The New York Times and the Washington Post, their reporters are getting thrown out of China. And so they're standing up for the principle here. But the upshot is they're not going to be able to report from the streets in China. So there's a little give and take, and they lost in that case.
Yeah, and you're right, yes. Judy. It's frightening to know that we can't really trust whatever information is coming out of China, especially related to the coronavirus.
And, of course, you have to remember that a third of the country doesn't believe that the New York Times is a legitimate news outlet either. You know, I mean, you got to remember that. And the other thing is that, you know, Rex, you've been an editor. You assign people to stories or not to stories. You have to make up your mind as to what's legitimate and what's not. And that goes on in every newspaper, doesn't it?
Yes. And it could be that the story about the Chinese government and the wealth of the top members was problematic. But what's difficult is that NPR has audio of the editor-in-chief of Bloomberg on a conference call saying it's going to, you know, invite the Communist Party to completely shut us down and kick us out of the country. So I just don't see that as a story that is justified. You know, it's interesting. You say, okay, is this story good enough to get us kicked out of the country? It's a good question. I remember years ago, a reporter friend of mine who had worked for the New York Daily News, whose publisher told him that a story that he did cost the newspaper something like a $6 million advertising contract from the supermarket chain D'Agostino's. Is that the chain in Manhattan?
There is certainly such a chain, but we don't want to get sued either.
Yeah, right. So I don't know if it was. But the publisher said, or perhaps the editor said to my friend, do you think that story was worth $6 million? And the reporter had to say, well, maybe not. Maybe it wasn't that good a story. That's a very interesting dilemma for any news organization. And we're thinking of it in the context of for-profit media, but I suppose you could have a major underwriter of WAMC decide to withdraw if they are really ticked off at something you say, Alan, you know? So you do, I suppose, think about that sort of thing.
A long time ago, that had happened at the Tertullian. Our publisher at that time, who had a conscience and understood what the job of a newspaper was, lost a major, since local advertising is the heart of small newspapers, lost a local advertiser by publishing something, and it was actually innocuous, but the owner did not want it published. And our publisher knew that you can't just say, well, I'll pull my advertising if you publish this, because you can't bow to that. But you're right, Rex, it's an interesting question because it has a lot of ramifications, and what are you going to choose to print and not print? How important is it?
And by the way, there are a lot of people who think that you don't have to threaten. There's always that presumptiveness. If you run this kind of story, you're going to get into trouble. And I'm sure there have been newspaper people in history who have said, that's a stinker, that's a good one to leave alone. Right?
Right. Well, how many newspapers wrote about whether carriers should be independent contractors or employees? Who's going to touch that story? What newspaper wants to take a position on that as a small example?
All right. Now we're going to have to do it.
All right.
Okay. We'll get to that, folks. We're out of time for this week's show, I'm afraid.
Whoa. No, really?
We've been
already?
Called out. We're going to have to do the story. It's already done. That's the media project. We are very grateful to our producer, David Gustina, for making these remote programs especially happen. And we are very grateful to you for listening to us. Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith. And we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
They got tired of patches on their pants. They They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor-at-large of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. And Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
The richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, 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 ding-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.